I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a great show for you today. I have amazing singer, songwriter, Joanna Barbera here today. She's from New York. We have a great conversation and I think you're going to enjoy it. But before we get to that, let me tell you, I've had a pretty eventful week. I'm doing this thing tonight, Friday, August 9th, 2013 at the Scottish Rite Theater. My friend David and some people put together this Elliott Smith tribute show. They put together four around the United States. And they've done a couple. Tonight's the one in Austin, and I'm doing it with such great people as David, Amy Cook, Susanna Schaffel, Ben Queller, Nakia, Dana Falconberry, Nina from Girl in a Coma, tons of people. Holly, who's my friend, Brad Hauser, Adrian Quesada, all these people are doing it. It's great. I went to the rehearsal last night. I'll talk about it in a minute. So anyway, Wednesday, I was going to work on those songs. But first, my dog Dylan went to go get his corns taken out in his feet. He's got some corns that come back, and he's got to get them operated on every few months, get them taken out because they're horrible. It's like having a little stone on your like heel or something going into the bone. So anyway, my ex took him in, and then I took our other dog Taylor running. It was fantastic. Then I thought, you know what? I think I'm going to take him swimming. So we went down to this place called Barton Springs here in Austin. They have a side of it that there's dogs can go swimming. And he jumped off a ledge there that wasn't super high. And he landed in some mud. His feet went out. His face planted, this poor puppy, and broke two teeth. So I had to take him emergency style to the vet. The vet checked him out. He's got to see a specialist. He's got a fracture. Took him yesterday to the vet, and they fixed his teeth. Incredible situation, stressful. Then he was on morphine and just kind of crying at home. And I'm actually going to go there and hang out with him for the afternoon and work on my Elliott Smith songs. So yesterday, after I hung out with him and Sandy got home, I went to rehearsal with all of these fabulous people I named at the beginning of the show. There, Tamika Jones, that's another person that's doing it. Awesome. I saw Kyle Ellison, whose brother Sims. Is the guy that this foundation is started for, that all of these shows are a benefit for. So these Elliott Smith shows are a Sims benefit. I'm sorry you can't come to it if you don't have tickets. It's sold out, has been for a while. They're not letting any people, and it's pretty intense. It's at Scottish Rite Theater. I'm very excited about it. I'll be happy to tell you guys all about it. I'm doing Waltz Number 2 and Bottle Up and Explode, and I'm singing backup on some songs, one with Tamika Jones and one with Ben Queller. Fantastic. It's super fun. Amy Cook, I got in there. I started singing my Waltz Number 2. I was messing up on the phrasing, kind of fucking up the timing of it. And she was there to straighten it out, help me out, and encourage me. And it was so awesome being in that room. Like, I went there at like 6:30, stayed till about 10:45 last night, enjoyed it to no end. I hung out, watched everyone sing, talked to people, and just bonded with my peers. It was beautiful. It was just exactly what I needed after that long day of, or two days of traumatic dog stuff. So now I'm going to go spend the rest of the day working on this Elliott Smith stuff, doing laundry and hanging out with my dogs. It's pretty good, you know? Oh, Dana Falconberry also was there. Fantastic. Holly, the pianist, I forget her last name sometimes. She's in Future Clouds and Radar and Cotton Mather. Fantastic musicians. Great time. God, I can't stop thinking about it. It was great. All right. My guest today is incredible singer-songwriter Joanna Barbera. She just put out her second album, Forget. She put it out this summer. She is from New York, and I first heard from her, or heard about her a few months ago. And we've been trying to line this up. We finally got it together. And then when we met, We totally became buddies. We sat down, we talked about everything. We talked about New York, we talked about life, her travels and how she found herself, music and what makes her make music. And we also had a great time talking. I think you'll get a vibe on that because she's a fantastic person. We actually ended up putting a show together that we're playing next Sunday. I think it's the 18th or 19th at the Scoot Inn with Joseph King. Look into that. I'll be talking about that in further episodes. All right, so I guess without further ado, here she is, my new friend, Joanna Barbera. Let's get down.
You fell into me, said we make a beautiful mess, looked out for me when I was coming in my Sunday dress.
Joanna Barbera, this is what I thought. I can make a song out of your name. That's already a song. Ready?
Yes.
Joanna Barbera. See?
It's the Kona Gang song.
Did you get that ever? People sing that to you?
I was probably, I'm going to date myself, I don't know, around like... I was young. I was like 4, 5, 6, that world, and I was very much convinced that that song was written about me, because I think my family would tell me that, oh, Joanna, your song's playing, and I was very honored.
Did you wonder why that weird old guy was in love with you?
Yeah.
And his friends were all singing to you?
They really loved me, that song.
So you have this new album, Forget, and you did it here in town. This is your second record?
Second, yeah.
And your first one you said you did at the Congress House?
Yeah, the first one I did all the basic tracks at the Congress House, and then it became a long process afterwards in home studios and stuff.
Do you like doing that?
What?
The home studio, traveling around. Seems like a way that people do it now.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's a good thing because you're not watching the clock and realizing that, you know, you're just spilling.
Which is also a bad thing.
Right.
Can be.
Right. Because
unless you have control.
Exactly. So yeah. Both records honestly took me, I'm looking at about a year to make a record at this point when I do it that way. So part of me for the next one, I want to challenge myself to like a 3-week lockdown, yeah, kind of,
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, because then you can really focus on it. Mm-hmm. And then you don't, like, you...
overthink it.
Yeah. And you play a lot of instruments. And you're playing a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah, yeah. What? Matt Smith really challenged me to do that. That wasn't the plan.
That's the guy that produced this album?
Mm-hmm.
And did you do it at his place? Does he have a place?
He has... he'll be leaving soon, but he had a...
Where?
Out in Smithsville.
Smithville? Yeah.
Just singular. I don't know. I don't go out there much except for to record this album. But, you know, out in Bastrop and you just keep going. It's what it feels like to me. And
if you get to LaGrange, you went too far.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely got lots of deer and trees. It's pretty. But anyway, he's on like a bunch of acres of land and he's got this house and he used to own Hot Tracks, and that was a whole thing that got closed down due to zoning. So he moved all his stuff out to this little house out in the woods. And that was also really cool, you know, just to be out in that space and openness. And we did a lot of creating out there, just he and I. So it was really cool.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go outside and record at all?
No, it was hot for a lot of the time. A lot of what we did, the bulk of it was in the summer. But no, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of outdoor noises if you're outside.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah.
How do you know Danny Malone?
I know Danny through multiple ways. I mean, we just sort of are doing the same thing, I think, and we fell into doing a showcase together with the Sessions like 4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That's how it started, and then...
I like those people that do those.
Yeah.
Right?
That's Lauren and CJ.
Lauren and CJ.
Yeah, they're really great people. I was their first performer.
Oh, really?
At the Sessions, and they've been really good to me since I played a bunch. And so Danny and I actually did one at the original out the hideout, and then we recently just did a show together at the W for the session. So
I wish I'd seen that. Like it was on a Monday or something.
Yeah, yeah, it's when they did one of
Shit, I wish I would have gone.
Well, I have a video.
You do?
Yeah.
How's Danny doing?
He's doing well.
I haven't seen him for a long time.
I mean, he seems to be doing cool. He made his whole like house into this thing he's calling the Magic Barn, and he has shows there, and they seem to be doing well. And he's just put out his record Balloons.
Yeah, it's a good album.
Yeah, it's really good. So that was done by Matt Smith as well.
Oh, it was? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Didn't they do that in another country?
Yep, they did it in
Finland?
Denmark.
No. Denmark.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on here. We did a live show of this at a place.
You and Danny. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah.
We did a residency like last year together at Hotel Vegas. And so the last one for my set, we did a live podcast interview.
Rad. Very cool.
Yeah. It was pretty cool, except for he told these horrible stories about his life and growing up. And then he kept on saying, oh, I hope my mom doesn't hear this. I hope my mom doesn't hear this. And the morning after I put it out, I had an email from his mom.
No.
Swear to God. Yeah. But she loved it.
Huh. Yeah. How would she... I mean, is she that hip that she... she found your podcast at like 8 in the morning.
My podcast is really popular with dude's moms. That's my demographic.
Are you like reaching out to people's moms ahead of time?
Hey, Danny, man. Good to see you. Oh, by the way, Joanna, I talked to your mom this morning.
Yeah, exactly.
And like... she said, break a leg. So you're from Northeast?
Yeah, I'm from New York.
State?
Yes.
Whereabouts?
Like 30 miles north of Manhattan, so I'm in the tri-state area, but I did grow up in the suburbs of New York.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
It was all right. I mean, I kind of fell into this little world of people who did what my parents did, which was they grew up in the city, and they didn't want to raise their kids in the city, so as soon as, you know, my parents got married, they left New York and raised us just close enough that we could get in and out easily, but we enjoyed a backyard.
And did they work there?
My father worked in the city all my life, yeah. And it was, you know, I loved going back and seeing where his roots were from. I always wished I was from the city because, you know, we had this, I'm 100% Italian, like the Lower East Side, New York.
Yeah.
That's where my family comes
that's
from.
Cool shit.
So, yeah, I mean, it's out of the movies kind of thing. It's really funny.
Is it weird to be in Texas, like culturally? Like when you first came here, were you like, what the fuck is wrong with these people? I remember my friend, real quick, I have a friend, John Biondolillo. Italian guy, right?
That's quite, hey, that's quite a name.
He'd go, I don't know, you live in this fucking city. Everyone's on the fucking couch all the time. Everyone's on the fucking couch. He thought everyone was just fucking lazy and slow.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, well, first of all, I kind of like walked myself into this slowly because I lived in San Francisco for 5 years. And that was, you know, a little bit of a slower pace for sure compared to New York. So that kind of got me a little bit in a mode that's different from growing up in New York. And then I moved here. And I mean, I did kind of like, and I still kind of get concerned with the fact of I've lived here for almost 6 years. Like, how much would I have gotten done if I had been living in a place like Manhattan trying to do music? You know, I kind of was like, I put out a record in 2009 and just writing. Because, you mean, you really could just kick it here. And that's what I realize is dangerous. So I'm... with this new record, I have a new momentum that I'm like, all right, like it's time to kick it into gear and start touring, hopefully.
That's the balance here, because like you can live here. Like you can't really go up to New York and really do this kind of like indie thing and think that you're going to be able to put the time in, because the amount of work you're going to have to do to support yourself is going to eat up all that creative time.
But I think it's a balance. Like I always notice that like if I know I have to go to work at 4, like all of a sudden at 2 p.m. I'm writing, like just in spite of, you know, the fact that I have to go to work. So there is, I don't know, sometimes for me personally, if there's too much open space, like
sure.
I do lose, I almost wonder if I was in that hustle, you know, and grind, if I would actually be more motivated to write, honestly. But theoretically what you're saying makes sense.
Yeah. It can be hard. I mean, I've seen people go up there. I mean, I don't know. I was thinking last week how great it would be if I moved to LA for my podcast, like how much more badass it, like more famous people would be on my show.
Huh.
Because I'd see them.
Yeah, you'd see them just on the street.
Well, not just on the street, but at a place and be like, hey, how you doing? Do you want to come be on the thing?
Right.
Yeah.
Who would you want to interview from
everyone.
LA? Pick
what do you mean? Everyone.
Pick one person.
Kiss. Fucking anybody. I don't know. Kiss. You know, Warren Beatty. Amy Mann. You know, people like that. Amy Mann. You could go and hang out at Largo and just like, oh, hey, look, there's it's the true story. Crystal Gale. Benmont Tench.
I think Crystal Gale would be more interesting.
She isn't in LA. She's probably in Nashville. Okay, so let's go back to you're a kid in the suburbs of New York.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad works. Your mom didn't work. She's
no. My mom worked. How many both kids? My parents are two older sisters, three intense Italian girls. I'm the youngest.
I'm yeah. Cuban, and I have like my mom had three sisters or has they had three sisters. My mom passed away, but it's like it's insane Cuban women. I know what you mean.
Oh yeah, it's very intense.
Is there screaming and crying that happens?
Oh yeah.
When you get together and it's just normal.
Oh now
it's one of the together? It's one of the like one of the you know the five steps of hanging out for a weekend with your family. You get together, there's joy, and then someone says something that really offends someone oh, yeah. else, and then there's crying and screaming.
It's very dramatic. Yeah. It's definitely like a Fellini film.
So your mom stayed home and raised you guys? And
but she worked. She oh, did she work. Okay. Yeah.
What'd she do?
She, God, I'm trying to, well, she actually, my mom opened up, like, it was so weird looking back on it, but her and her friend, like, opened up a party store. Like, my mom, like, loves to do, like, weird favors and create like our Easter baskets were like out of fucking control.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
like things were like talking and spinning in there. Like it was really something else. And she's very like the, you know, guinea of Martha Stewart. You know, Martha yeah. Stewart could like make Christmas as ridiculous as it can be. Like that yeah. was, you know, my mom. So she owned this store where they would like, you know, sell all these ridiculous party favors and stuff, but she also would like decorate parties and she loved it. And she did that for like 5 years. And I remember it was a lot of fun because like the other family she owned it with, they had kids and we used to like go to the store and run around and like suck the helium out of the balloons like all day and yeah, stuff yeah, like yeah, that yeah. or the, whatever the machine. So she did that. I always remember her working. She always had to work except for when I was really little. Yeah, I mean, that's just sort of what we had to do to make ends meet, I guess, where we were living, you know.
Yeah, because it's a little pricier to live. Or no, it's
yeah,
just
it is.
It's just expensive because you live in the thing. And
being that close to the city is expensive.
How did you get into music and learning instruments and stuff?
Was
that something you wanted or was it pushed on you?
When you grew up in a very, very Roman Catholic Italian family from New York, you're not pushed to do anything but to, like, yeah. go to church and not have sex. you're not taking, like, dance lessons and,
okay.
you know, stuff like that. You're, like, you know, figure it out. Go outside and talk to a tree or something.
That's exactly what being Cuban is like.
Yeah.
You're not, like, a first generation born here.
Yeah. It's not as...
I learned how to swim. My dad threw me in the pool. Like, that's how exactly. I learned how to swim.
Exactly. Yeah. You just kind of... I mean, we had some luxuries because my father was really adamant, actually, about giving us the life he didn't have, which is why he took us to the, you know, quote-unquote country. And, you know, we did do things that they never did growing up. Like, I remember my dad, like, really wanted to take us out on a boat, so we did. But, like, we ended up getting stuck in the middle of a lake for, like, 3 hours.
That's
you know?
A real immigrant kind of thing, though. Like, I'm going to give you better than I had. And
yeah.
I'm going to go to this place that I may not be able to really afford, but I'm going to make it work because my kids are going to live better than I did. And
yeah.
that's the American dream, right?
So my father, my father is actually really, and my mother, now my father has passed away, but my... He was always really supportive when I did start to say I wanted to do, you know, be an artist. But they didn't push it. Like, they didn't put me – I always used to say I wanted to be a singer and I want to be an actress. I always wanted to do these arts. And they didn't, like, push me into classes.
Yeah, they
or
didn't
anything.
Go like, oh, well, let's look up and let's get you in to see if you can get into Juilliard or
right,
or right here. Go to the Fame School.
I know, yeah. But they did the best they could. And they did – my, you know, they put me in piano lessons, which I hated. But, you know – looking back on it, I mean, I got it. I had this musical inclination. Like, my grandmother played piano. She'd always play at holidays. She would yeah. just, like, had this real smoky, raspy voice for, like, from, like, smoking forever. And she would just, like, play standards on the piano at holidays. And I got it. Music made sense to me. So I actually put it on the back burner, mostly out of probably lack of confidence, unfortunately. And then I went away to college, you know, and, like, that big freedom of... I'm in college, and, like, someone handed me, I guess, like, what, an Ani DiFranco, like, tape, you know? And when I was in college, I was like, I went to go see her and I saw this, you know, really strong woman with her guitar and whatever. So I started picking up the guitar and it made sense to me from the piano enough, you know, yeah. I could always play by ear basically. Right, right. So I just started, you know, writing a little bit in college, and I was really closeted though about it. And then I moved to San Francisco. And
wait, where'd you go to college?
I went to school in Arizona, actually. Wow. Arizona State. Yeah.
Okay, now that must have been weird going from New York to fucking
really weird
white bread town.
Yeah. So basically, my best friend and I were horrible in high school, and we decided to both stay home a year. We're like, let's just stay home a year, get our grades up, and get the fuck out of here, because
do like a community college thing.
Yes, right. Because her too, her parents were from Italy, and again, you just don't leave New York. Like, you're Italian, you're from New York, near your family, you know. And her and I were like kind of craving this freedom beyond that, because, you know, we read and we were like hippies and we loved to read about the beatniks and stuff like that. So we
okay, hold on. Mm-hmm. So
I've had a lot of coffee.
No. I'm liking this. No, it's going to keep on going. It's really strong.
This is ridiculous. Okay. Yeah.
Were you like what years? What, like at the end of high school? Are we talking early 90s or late 90s, mid 90s?
Oh, when I was like,
when you were a hippie and you were just about to get out of high school, just about to graduate.
Oh, like, yeah, late 90s.
Okay, mm-hmm. late 90s. Mm-hmm. And so what, you were hippies and like you reading the beatniks, obviously, if you get into that on the road thing. Yeah, and then you're oh my God, there's freedom.
Yes.
So what were you going to go study? Like, what was the focus or the dream at that point?
She went out to study literature.
Okay.
And I went out, I wanted to do music, actually. I originally went into theater. And I hated it because it was just so, like, I wanted to do, like, weird film or performance art and stuff. And theater was so, like,
Oklahoma.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what I ended up graduating with was a interdisciplinary degree in, like, performing arts and women's studies, actually, is what I ended up graduating with.
Did you feel like you learned a lot with the women's studies because maybe nobody told you anything? And that Roman Catholic thing, people don't tell you anything. And they just tell you, no.
Yeah.
They don't explain anything to you. They just, like, whatever you do, don't, like, touch yourself. Don't touch someone else. Don't put that thing anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not why.
Yeah. No, never why.
Or you know, this is what's happening to your body.
Oh, yeah. There's no logistics. It's just like you're going to fall into the depths of hell.
So did you feel like you learned a lot in women's studies, like about sexuality and like things that maybe no one told you?
Oh, my God. Like, I feel like I was so blessed with falling into that because it just, I mean, and I'm still in the process of it, but just this reclaiming being a woman and that it's not. I just was unraveling in this way that I didn't even know was possible because I just was so, like, into this category of exactly what the world or this country wants you to think of yourself, you know? So it was really good for me. But, I mean, it's like, what, how many years later? And it's still a process of, like, really staying true to yourself and realizing that, you know, we do have a lot of power as women and not falling into these, like, little timid...
Yeah.
You know, subcategories.
Sure.
Especially with everything that just went down this week in
In
Austin. It's really, really reopened my world.
Did you go down there?
I sure did.
You did?
Yeah. And I haven't been, you know, active in politics or even feminism. I mean, besides just living every day being as strong and confident as I can be.
Right.
You know, and treating.
How hip is your mom being Roman Catholic?
How hip?
And how hip was she? Did you tell her you went down there? Hey, I went down there. You see that thing on CNN? Mom, I was there. I was one of the orange shirt people screaming.
I'm sure she knows. I'm sure she's like, Joanna's probably down there. She's a freaking picket sign, you know.
Little hippies protesting.
My mom's cool. She's actually, my mom's funny. She's like really old school, but she's also really, she's always been really non-judgmental. She's always been the one, like, my dad would go away on business trips, and, like, she was the one that, like, when she'd go to sleep, like, I could have my friends over and we'd drink beers, and, like, I knew I wouldn't really be in trouble if she woke up. But if my father was in town, like, my, you know, I would be grounded for the rest of my life. Like, it was weird. She kind of was, like, the lenient one, maybe to make up for how strict my father was, because he was really strict.
Yeah.
But, you know, she thinks stuff is, like, funny. Like, she thinks, like, if I showed her the picture that I have with, like, the 65-year-old woman who's got, like, tampons as a bullet, what are they called, the strap that
you... Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like bullet strap, like Pancho Villa wears.
She's got this. I have a picture of this woman who's got like a bunch of tampons. And I'm just like, yeah, you know. And I'm sure if I like send that to my mom, she would just like die laughing. Now, am I going to have a conversation with her about abortion and why it should be legal? Like, no, it's just, we're just not going to go there, you know.
Okay, so this has opened your eyes. You got the women's studies, and so you went from Arizona to San Francisco?
Yeah, so...
Why San Francisco?
Well, while I was in... when I finally got out, and yes, it was a total culture shock. So my point is my best friend and I from New York, who have never left New York, basically, like, got into this school. It was the cheapest out-of-state school to go to that had... acting.
You guys should have written a sitcom while you were there, because it's just a
perfect, we were like Laverne and Shirley. It was ridiculous. So like we literally, so we never visited it.
Yeah.
Our parents were like, fine, we could kind of afford this. You're still taking out loans, but sure. So we, and the fact that her parents let her go is just out of control. She's the youngest daughter of, like I said, you know, immigrants from Italy. And we show up, and looking back at it, like, we were so obnoxiously dressed. Like, I don't think we were, like, shaving, you know? Like, we were just sort of, like, you know, just, and we were just so loud. Like, our accents at that point, I wish I had a hand recording. I mean, like, Dolores would leave for class, and I'd be, like, screaming out the window, like, hey, you got your books? I think you left something on the bed, you know? Like, we were just horrific.
And her name's Dolores?
Dolores,
fuck,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Dolores Alfieri and Joanna Barbera.
Oh, my God.
It was really amazing. And we, I mean, people got such a kick out of us, because we were just, and us, too. I mean, we had never met, like, a Texan before. You know, it was like the biggest trip. We were just like, what the fuck? It was definitely something else for sure. We got it after a while. We like hopped in the car. We go to LA. I mean, we were like on fire, you know, these little sheltered New York Catholic girls that just let loose, you know.
That is awesome.
It really was. She writes a lot about it.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
So, she's a writer.
She is a writer.
The literature.
Dolores Alfieri, yeah.
Where do you find her stuff?
She has a blog online. I'm sure if you looked up like Blogspot or something in her name, it would come up. I wish I knew the exact. But yeah, she's an incredible writer. I mean, she writes about being raised in a home. You know, she writes a lot about her parents. Her father had passed away too, which is really weird because we both kind of grew up with each other's family and we both lost our fathers within like 3 years of each other.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, she's a Spitfire for sure.
So did she move to L.A. and you moved to San Francisco? Or you both moved
to San Francisco? No. Oh, so basically once I got the itch when I moved to Arizona, I, like, took a year off, of course, and, like, ended up, like, going to London because I had a boyfriend who was there and was taking, like, a class out there. And then I actually, like, ended up going to Hawaii for, like, 3 months because I had some hippie friends that were just, like, living on the beaches there. And then I promised myself that I would finish college. So then I actually did go back to school and finish. Like, I don't know. I think it was just like a year late. And then within 3 weeks, I was like, I'm out of here. And I got hopped in my little 91 Corolla with like the stupid dead bear on the back and drove my ass up to San Francisco. I didn't know anybody. Drove up to San Francisco. I knew one person, like 23. I can't believe I drove there on tour like 3 years ago. And I'm like driving over the Bay Bridge. And I'm like, I cannot believe like my little 23-year-old self is like, I'm moving to San Francisco. Yeah. Like my little Corolla, like... It's a big fucking city.
You were empowered, man. You got out of your place. You went out to the desert. You learned about yourself.
It's true.
You found out who you were. And you're like, fuck it. I'm going to San Francisco. Boom.
I don't know if I do that now.
Joanna.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there was this innocence. Like, God. Yeah, it was something else.
So did you play in San Francisco?
So I was still sort of a closet musician. Cool thing happened. Well, actually, I don't know. I mean, how far into this do you want to go?
As far as it goes.
I got into a really kind of interesting spiritual group when when I was in Arizona, because the whole Sedona thing is
close.
Yeah. And
that's the spiritual vortex of this hemisphere, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. Yes. And I sort of, when I got to San Francisco, without seeking it out, ended up like after a year finding like a sector that was there. And fortunately and unfortunately, like 3 years of my life was 100% dedicated to that. And it was very like,
when you say a sector and spiritual group, do you mean a cult?
It was cultish, but I shit you not, there was no like sex weird shit going on at all. Like, it definitely wasn't. But yes, it was definitely like, we are doing this for the vision of humankind, and like, this is where your energy should be. And I was there like every day, and my energy wasn't going into any music, and it was silently sort of frowned upon to like be chasing after something else besides this collective vision. So I did that for a while, and finally I had this one teacher that really rubbed me the wrong way.
In the thing?
Mm-hmm. Towards the end, okay. He kind of just arrived, and he really hit like the feminist nerve in me. He was just a dick, you know? No pun intended.
Yeah.
and I remember I just started a little bit pulling away, and then like I got this internship, which was like a big no-no. Like I totally started pulling in different directions, and I got this internship at this studio called Hyde Street Studios, which mm-hmm. is like one of the oldest San Francisco studios. And then I was like, so basically I was kind of like, F you guys, I can't believe I haven't done music yet. I was like 26, so I had held out that long. Wow. You know, I mean, been writing but like not sharing it with anyone,
right.
So then I go into this recording studio and I meet this guy, and he's an engineer there, and he like, we end up drinking wine one night, he records one of my songs, and he's like, oh my God, you have an amazing voice, which I really did need that validation at that point, you know, like I didn't know that I was good. I mean, you know, whatever.
You are
that,
good.
Whatever that means, yeah. But you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. There's a, you know.
And he just helped me see it from a whole different angle, and then that was it. I mean, that was... And then
you were sold.
I was sold, and I went for it, and I played like my first coffee shop, and I started playing coffee shops in San Francisco, and me and my acoustic guitar, you know, trying to be like Gillian Welch. I was going more for a folky thing then, for sure.
Yeah, I read about the folky stuff, but then when I heard your album, I'm like, this is a rock album.
Totally different direction, yeah.
So you're running around San Francisco, Gillian Welching out.
Yeah, now, like, I went from, like, being totally sober and part of the spiritual group to, like, in, you know, the recordings. I was interning at the recording studio, hanging out with a bunch of dudes, you know, drinking, recording at 3
Did you ever hang out with rock stars? Anyone?
Rock stars. Well, my boyfriend at the time ended up working for NoFX, engineering for them, becoming their house engineer. So I actually used to go to their studio all the time and see those guys, and I actually recorded. Much of the album that was done at the Congress House was also done out in San Francisco at Motor Studios.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've hung out with Fat Mike and those guys a bunch. I never was into them, so, like, it was really funny. People would, like, die to meet them, and I just didn't give a shit, which I think they really appreciated.
I know their logo. I don't know their music, but yeah. I know what I've seen shirts. You know what I mean?
Killing punk rock since 1991.
No, just that's no
what effects.
That's
what
logo.
They say, though, like, in their T-shirts and stuff, yeah.
So what made you, how did you get out of San Francisco?
I have to pee. Let's pause, because that's a whole other thing. Is that okay? Can I say that?
I like it when people do ask if they're talking too much though during it, because it really, this is your chance to just talk without any kind of limit. Okay, so you're going to leave San Francisco.
Oh, why I left San Francisco. Yeah. Okay, so.
What happened? You broke up with the guy.
Yeah, but basically it was interesting. Right after I went to start doing the internship, and I slowly was leaving the spiritual group I was a part of,
which
will remain anonymous.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, it's okay. You can leave it anonymous.
Yeah, we should. I mean,
people are going to start Googling spiritual groups in San Francisco, and they're going to realize that is the spiritual group capital of the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's, like I said, it started in Arizona, actually, in Sedona. But so it was really interesting. It was almost, I mean, it actually feels very divinely guided in a sense of the way I was led out of it, because they were very much like, you know, we're your family. This is your human family, whatever. And 6 months after I had left, and I had met my boyfriend at the time, and I found out, while I met Jamie, is his name, I found out that my dad had gotten cancer, and that was like a huge blow, because my dad was like one of the healthiest people I knew, you know, like didn't smoke, didn't drink, ate really healthy. And my mom, on the other hand, like smokes like a train and, you know, whatever. Sorry, Mom. Sorry, I'll try to stick away.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. So I found out he got cancer, and I had only been with Jamie for like, you know, a handful of months. And that was just... Actually, like, I had lost my grandmother in July. Like, we'd met in March, and I lost my grandmother in, like, July. And then, like, the next month I found out my dad had cancer. So life, like, all of a sudden got really serious. Like, I had crossed over to the other side of like adulthood really quickly, and I don't know that I was ready for it. You know, losing my grandmother, she was the first person to lose close to me in my life, and then finding out my dad had cancer, and then, you know, he had pancreatic cancer, so it went really quick.
Yeah.
So I left San Francisco intuitively, but really reluctantly at the same time, because my brain couldn't really make sense that my dad was probably going to die. But I knew I had to go there, but I was kind of kicking and screaming. I didn't want to leave Jamie and whatever. But I went back to New York just for a handful of months to take care of my dad. I don't know why I left and went back to San Francisco. Like, he started like chemo, and I was like, all right, well, good luck, you know. But it was weird because before that I had been just like there to take, I just didn't know.
Yeah, there's subconscious self-preservation techniques that happen because you probably couldn't even handle it. I mean, just imagine you're gonna watch someone deteriorate, your dad, like, that's not
I mean, I just think that your brain can't
sense
of it. But I did go back. I went back for 3 months, stayed there, and then, you know, he was very like, it's okay, Joanna, I'm fine, you know, you go back. So I went back in the fall, and then ironically, I went back, like, I drove back with one of my best friends all the way from New York to San Francisco in my grandmother's car, and we had so much fun. It was really weird. It was this really empowering trip that we had taken together, and then right around Christmas, my mom, when I was going to go home anyway, my mom's like, yeah, you know, Joanna, dad's really not doing that well. So at that point, I went back home for Christmas and I didn't leave. And then he was around till March again. So it was like a year process. And he actually passed away the morning after my birthday, which is interesting because he waited, you know, I think. So once that had happened, my life was like flipped upside down, and I went back to San Francisco and I tried to make, you know, Jamie was great. Like, he flew out to New York and, you know, whatever, but I tried to make like a relationship work, and I was just, I didn't know which way was up, you know? So that relationship ended quickly after my father had passed. And then I hit this wall. I had been there 5 years, and I just think I needed to like figure out who Joanna was without a father in this world, you know? And I just hopped in my car. I knew one person here. I kind of did the same thing. I drove out here, didn't know if I was going to stay or not, and just found Austin to be really nurturing and welcoming. And people aren't necessarily like that in San Francisco. San Francisco is such a beautiful place, but it's very, I don't know, like, there's a lot of separatism there, it feels like, believe it or not. Like, a lot of, and everyone I meet who's been there or lives there, like, says this. It's kind of like, you just kind of, I don't know, I just never really made a group of friends and like that I still talk to it. But Austin was so like hospitable and welcoming, and I think I needed
it. Really
that.
Is.
I really needed it. So that was the move here.
I think also too, if you're good, they give like they're more welcoming. Like, if you're good, people are like, all right, I'll introduce you to some people. It's my friend Joanna. Yeah. She's good.
Yeah. So it was the right move. You know? And then I got really like determined and anxious to like do what I said I was going to do with my life. I think that happens too when you lose. I mean, you lost your mother. You know how it goes. Like, you kind of get
fuck
this.
Fuck yeah!
Like,
I went into complete total. I mean, I was a teenager, but I went into complete and total like career mode.
Yeah, you just feel like you have to get something done before it's too late or something. Yeah,
yeah. You realize there is a finite amount of time.
Exactly. So the first record's actually very heavily about like religion and God and death. I mean, a lot of that, it's I'd say 90%
of it. Is that available on iTunes and stuff?
Yeah. Carnival Beginning is what it's called.
Yeah, Carnival Beginning.
And it is on iTunes, and it's really different, you know, it's got a totally different vibe to it, but it is a chapter that's important to me, and I think maybe later on down the line, that album will make a little bit more sense to fans, maybe. I mean, people love it, you know, it's just not a typical, you know, of an album. Like, if someone was just like, hey, who's this person, you know, it's not like, here's the hit and here's, you know, easy listening. Like, it's a little dark. I mean, this record's dark too.
Yeah, I like it though, because it feels like you know, you sound like someone from New York in your attitude singing.
Oh yeah,
yeah, you do. Yeah. You have that kind of
it's in the veins.
Yeah, there's like there's an unaffected like kind of, you know what I mean?
Right.
Blondie has it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or Debbie Harry has it, whatever. Yeah, Blondie
right,
is a band.
Right.
All right, so you put out that record and you started playing out on the playing out? Yeah. Going around? Did you?
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
I pushed it. I think I was playing Momo's a bunch. And
didn't we never met there?
We've probably met before. I'm sure we have. And
when you said now that, like, now I keep on thinking you saying, like, oh, I met you, I was with Joe Hummel. And I was like, oh, Joe has that sort of, like, hey, if you're from New York, like, whenever I meet people from New York that don't know Joe, I always take them to Joe. Oh, you got to meet Joe, yeah, so you'll feel at home.
Yeah, yeah. I remember he was like, you don't know this? When I met you, I forget where it was. He was like, you don't know this guy? What the hell's the matter with you?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people in Austin that I probably should know.
Sometimes, like, you know, as much as we cross, I mean, that's why I'm glad I have this show. I meet, like, people that I never get to know their whole life story.
Right.
I know it.
Yeah, what a trip. Yeah, I guess that's a trip.
You know, huh? What's funny is now in conversation sometimes someone will be like say next week, someone's like, oh, I'm gonna go see Joanna Barbera. You know Joanna Barbera? I'm like, oh yeah, you know, she was in a spiritual group that was a cult in San Francisco. Like,
do I know her?
I have these great she's got a
freckle on her left ass cheek. You like know everything about me now.
You don't want me saying
I'm
that out there.
I'm just kidding. No, I don't want you to say that. Don't say that.
No, I won't. Your mom would be really mad.
She's really mad. Maybe we have to edit that I just said that. I'm just noticing this picture of two dogs in love and a heart.
I know.
That's amazing. I wish...
That's a painting of my dogs that my ex-girlfriend did.
That's pretty outstanding.
Isn't that nice? Well, you know, they're brothers and they love each other they're in love. They sit around kissing.
They'll
kiss for like 10 minutes straight, just kissing.
I love dogs.
Yeah, awesome. Me too. Do you have dogs?
I grew up with dogs. Yeah. I don't. I mean, I've been caught. I feel like the one thing missing from my life is a dog, but... I travel too much, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so you traveled and toured for that record.
I did, by myself. I traveled and toured, and
How was that? Because that was your first touring experience then, right? But yeah. You traveled, but you hadn't toured. And
yeah.
Did you go to a place where there's a coffee shop in, like, Iowa, and there's just one homeless guy falling asleep in a chair and you want to retire?
That's exactly what it was.
So you had the experience.
Yes, I had the experience. A few times. And I also had the experience. I actually went on tour once with Hamill on Trial. Good old Ed Hamill. That was a... He had never been on tour.
Mm-hmm. A long time ago.
He used to play at the Electric Lounge. Yeah. I heard all about it.
Well, you know what I always thought was weird? He was like this happy little hippie guy, and then like
shaved
his
head
and started wearing black all the time.
Really?
Yeah, he was like a guy that wore like a Guatemalan print, like stretchy pants.
Oh shit!
And like a little hat. I mean, don't tell him.
Just to say, I might have to give him shit.
I mean, I saw him on TV here all the time.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that was a good experience, and that was through this whole... You know, my manager lives in Buffalo, New York, and she worked for Righteous Babe Records for 6 years. So that's why I'll be in Buffalo in 2 days, because I have a album release party up there. So that's how I had the Ed Hamill connection and stuff like that.
Oh, right, because he was on her label.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
He opened for her a bunch of times, so he's probably most famous nationally and internationally as the guy who toured with Ani for, like, years. She loved having him open the show for her.
He opened for a band I'm in called Skyrocket.
Oh, nice.
At the ND like two years ago.
Oh, I believe it.
It was the last time I saw him.
Yeah, he's funny.
He's very
really funny.
Yeah.
He's a great
I'll be honest,
performer.
I don't think he's ever liked me. I'll say that's a guy that I don't think ever liked me. He's never been nice to me.
Really? Mm-hmm. I wonder why that is.
Or never, like, it always seems like it's... Ugh. Like, that's what the vibe I get.
Really? Yeah. Oh, he always strikes
maybe
me
I was
such
a dick.
A nice
maybe
guy.
I was a
yeah,
dick
maybe
at
you
some
said
point
something. You probably said something stupid. I'm just kidding.
I might have.
We
I
all
have.
Say things stupid sometimes.
Have you ever said something stupid to someone that might be important in the business?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. I've dated quite a few of them.
Yeah? Okay, let's talk. It's hard to... I'm trying to date outside of the entertainment business.
You hit a certain point.
It's hard.
You hit a certain point when you realize that that's probably the only way.
Yeah, but civilians don't understand who you are as a person. Like, you have to constantly explain your weirdness.
Yeah.
Like, and if you're with someone that at least has an understanding of creatives, they'll, you know, the artistic mindset and the kind of, like, self-loathing, self-abuse, and, like, you know.
Right.
Crazy mood.
Yeah, but we don't
patterns.
Need two of those people is the point. You know, you just don't
that
need
happened
to.
Happened with Artist Girl. It was too much, too many people here.
Yeah, you got to find somebody who maybe, I don't know, I mean, I'm single, but you have to find somebody who maybe is like fascinated by the fact that you're like that, but doesn't need to be that way too.
I met a nice girl this weekend.
Oh, good.
Very pretty and works with autistic people.
Look at that. So we're kind of like autistic people.
finally someone understands me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's actually probably a really good thing. You can start freaking out, shaking, and she'll just hold you like in that like calming position.
Yep. I don't know. I haven't tried. We're going to go on a date on Friday. So we'll see what happens.
Awesome. I like to hear about it.
I'm sure if she listens to this show that she loves that this is going to be a quick way to lose dates fast.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Hey, by the way, I'm not going out with you because you talk about everything. So you toured by yourself, then you came back, and what was the change artistically?
For the, to get into a rock album? Mm-hmm. Sort of, well, I think I got a little pissed off.
What'd you get pissed off about?
I had pulled myself out of a pretty toxic relationship that had lasted about 3 years here in town. And I don't think it's his fault. I think that honestly, a lot of stuff about my father didn't get released. So I think it started pouring out into this relationship. And then I think once we finally broke up, like, you know, finally she spilled into song, which is a good thing. I wouldn't say this record's entirely a breakup album because that's just annoying.
But that feeling's in there.
Well,
there is kind of like
it's resurrection and retribution. I don't know. There's this definitely like this, like, I'm going to let this come out so I could be done with it. That's why the album's called Forget. Out, done, moving on, chapter close, you know? So that's the whole point.
You're fucking cool. You are.
Thank you.
I can't tell you. I know. Ditto. I said this when the thing wasn't on, but yeah, I'm so glad that you reached out again.
Thanks. I'm glad I did too.
I'm sorry. I was overwhelmed with emails and people I didn't know. Oh. So I was like, whatever. If this person doesn't have time, then they don't have time. Oh, wait, no, there's worries. Someone else has time. And then all of a sudden you came back and you said, hey.
I came back.
What happened? And then I said, let's do this. And then you did. You came.
I did.
All right, so that was that, and what was it? Did you write it? Did you sit down and, like, I mean, how many, you know how sometimes, like, shit just pours out? Like, you're like, oh, yeah. Fuck, I'm doing this record. And then, like, 3 weeks later, you have, like, 10 songs.
Yeah, no, it didn't happen like that. I mean, a lot of it was written, like, I'd say, like, you know, 5 songs were written while I was in the relationship, 5 were written on the way out of the relationship, and, you know, once I was out of it. So it is, you could hear it in the lyrics. I mean, you could hear, I didn't make the songs go in like that chronological order by any means, but there's definitely like the songs that were like, I'm out, see ya. There's like the songs of like reclaiming the self, like there's the like really sad, like this is time to be done with this song. Like there's a song called Time that I actually wrote like when I moved out and I was like homeless and I ended up just going out to Colorado and staying out, you know, I stayed in a cabin by myself for like 2 weeks and went crazy and wrote the song Time on that album. It's probably my favorite song on the album. You know, Tempt Me is the first song that came from being like, guess what? I'm out. See you later.
I like also that there's succinct songs that you have that and it's just 33 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's
pretty
cool.
It's a 33-minute commitment.
It's also New York.
Yeah.
Like the Strokes.
Let's get the shit done.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, here's your album. Mm-hmm. It's only half an hour. But all the songs are there.
Took a year to make, but it's only a half hour, yeah.
So, yeah. So how did you, did you feel like you were going into a different sound when you made this record? Were you like...
No.
Were you still kind of just like acoustic guitar and or pianoing
it and feeling folky? I bought an electric guitar.
Okay.
And it was kind of just like sitting dormant and I never had played it live. And then I went to Matt and I told him I wanted to do something more modern. Excuse me, I'm burping. I told him I wanted to do something more modern sounding, less Americana. Excuse me. Your coffee is giving me indigestion. And then he was like, okay.
That means it's good, by the way.
He's like, all right, you know, we can do that. And we started with that song Time, which actually is the only acoustic guitar song on the album.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It came out beautifully. And I was like, all right, let's keep going with this. It was supposed to be like a 5-song EP. And then that's why it took so long. And then as we started recording, I kept kind of like digging into the bag of songs I had written while I was in that relationship that I didn't think were relevant or even
good. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you know, Matt, what do you think of this song? I'm just going to demo it on a, you know, my phone or something and send it to you. And I'd send it to him. He's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah. And then I did that again, and I did that, like, for four songs. So then we're, like, we're at, like, you know, eight songs at that point. And then I had two newer songs. So this is how the record completed itself. Like, that song Lesson, which is the last song on the album, I never thought that that would be. I thought it was just a little demo that I'd written, you know, while I was away, miserable, on, like, a trip with, you know, certain someone. And there it is, my favorite song on the album now, the way it manifested itself. It just sounds like this, like, weird Elliott Smith song, you know?
Yeah, there's some elements of that in it, mm-hmm. too.
So I can't wait to get back into the studio again for that reason. And that's why it may take a year, you know, because I knew I just had to get into the studio to start writing again. And that's what happened. I got in the studio and I started writing again. And I started completing these songs that were half written. I Confess is another one that's, like, my favorite. And it was, like, half written. And so Matt was really cool about being like, this song's great, I need another verse. And I'd be like, really, dude? And he'd be like, yeah, I need another verse in there. And I'm like, fuck. And I'd have to go write it. That was so interesting to go back in and to complete a song that had been written, like,
a while back.
And that's why I'd like to work with Matt again. Like, I'm really seriously considering it. Like, I love kind of working with different people just to get different sounds so everything really is its own chapter. But I don't know how many producers do that.
You know, man, if you can trust someone, I've been, you know, there's been a few guys that I've worked with that, like, will say, like, that is bad. That's bad. That third verse doesn't, mm-hmm. we're not doing anything in that thing.
Yeah, and I don't, like, think a lot of producers will do that, because especially some of these bigger producers.
I think local ones don't. Bigger ones do.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
The opposite,
the
huh?
ones I've worked with have been like, you know, hey, this is not.
Huh.
Just go fix that.
Okay.
And they don't tell you what to do. They go, this needs something. Go do it.
Go, okay.
Make this better for me to listen to.
Cool.
But, you know, you're also just dealing with someone's taste and opinion. Just hopefully they're...
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely times where I'd be like, fuck you, I'm not changing that. Yeah. Matt and I had we had a blast, but I mean, it really was. I think he coined it best when he's like, Jesus, Joanna, this is like a married, you know, a marriage without the sex. Just he and I, like, bickering at certain points. But I mean, he's one of my best friends now, you know. We've become really good friends due to that journey.
That really does help. Mm-hmm. Do you know Mike McCarthy?
Yeah.
I have that with him. Like, we did a big record together. And, I mean...
It grew into a friendship.
Well, I think we had a friendship. Might have. First. I think it kind of destroyed our friendship for a while, but then we got it back. It did, actually.
No.
My label wanted somebody else to mix it, and he had said when we started the record, no matter what happens, I don't want Jack Joseph Puig mixing this record, because I know he's friends with your label guys.
Like, you're dropping names.
Oh, yeah, I'm a name dropper.
All right.
And so we were like, oh, no, we'd never let that jackass handle our album. And as soon as we finished the record, they're like, all right, Jack Joseph Puig has to mix this record. And I was like, okay.
And that was it.
It was for a while, but me and Mike are good.
All right.
I go visit him. He's on the show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I would work with him again, too. I've never, you know... Another thing, too, is, like, some guys that you can really trust and have a thing. Like, when you're sitting at Mike is, say, mixing something, and you say, oh, this should sound a little bit more like this. He moves out of the way and is like, show me what you mean.
Yeah.
Without irony or being a dick or anything. He's like, really, show me what you, because maybe you might do it better. And he's always, that's what I like about guys.
Yeah, that's a very wise way of handling things, yeah. I think, as a producer. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely very, very good at what he does. That's for sure.
Yeah. A lot of guys are. I mean, this Matt guy is great.
Yeah.
From what I hear.
They've worked together, too, a little bit.
Yeah.
He's assisted Mike a little bit.
Oh, you know what? That's good, because I feel like there's a thing I learned. My whole recording thing changed when I started. I worked with Mike in, like, the mid-90s on two songs. And, like, I walked away and I was a completely different. My philosophy on recording was completely different.
Hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Right on.
He's a good guy like that.
All right.
So, So you making this record, how did you end up knowing when you were done? Because it took so long, like a year.
Well, I once I hit 10 songs, I wanted it to be, that was good. I wasn't going to try to force anything. I did feel like I forced a couple of things on the album, but people just, there's
what
a
do
couple,
you mean, force?
Well,
writing
there's,
or
there's
force
a, old, there's an older song that's on there that, like, my manager really wanted me to put on, and it is sort of like New York City. It is sort of like the hit. It's the poppiest one on the album. I don't feel like she really fits in here, but maybe she does. Maybe because, like you said, there is New York on there. Like, I sort of feel like I had to get out of my own way and just trust some people. And Matt wanted to redo a song off Carnival Beginning, which just as well has been way more rock because it is a little light in the loafers on Carnival Beginning. And it does kind of lend itself to wanting to be more rock. So that is... you know, on there. So for me personally, like, I just emotionally was so done with those songs. And I think that if they weren't on there, I felt like the 8 songs that are on there besides those two are like a complete story. However, you know, since I put out the record, New York City is this person's favorite song and just as well as this person's favorite song. So who the fuck am I to say? You know, it is what it is. And that was it. I was just like, it's 10 songs. I really did want to be done with it. I wanted those songs to be out of me so that Joanna, where she is now, can start writing. And the stuff that I am writing now is even, you know, I mean, anything can be produced in any way, but it is way different than that. I've actually been writing like some sort of like 50s sounding ballads with like a ton of reverb on my, like, you know, semi-hollow body, and I'm like, where the fuck did this come from? So who knows? Oh,
that's kind of cool.
And I've been writing on piano too, like kind of dipping back into like my 90s, like Tori Amos, you know, 16-year-old girl. Like, so there's some
who are the girls out there
at that age?
Okay, say now who, obviously Ani, and she's more than now. Anything, she, like, what she did just for people in music,
right,
that want to have their own business.
Right.
Like, I remember
she paved
this
the way,
great
sure.
article about her in like the mid-90s where the big labels were coming to her and saying like, you know, we can sign you. And she was like, okay, well, how much am I going to get for my records that I say? Oh, you'll get this. And she's like, dude, this isn't... like, I make so much more money on my own. Why would I do this? Mm-hmm. And I just remember going like, wow, no one was saying that at the time.
Yeah. And I don't even think it was just about money, but I think that was a huge part of it.
Yeah, I don't think, there's artistic freedom, but I'm pretty sure they would have let her do whatever the fuck she wanted when they signed her.
Probably. Yeah, probably.
I mean, at that point, she was a powerhouse.
She definitely paved the way, I think, for the, you know, do-it-yourself artist, for sure. But now, I mean, honestly, I don't really listen to Ani that much now. I hope she doesn't listen to this. that was a time and a place.
Sure.
But she raised me in a lot of ways. Musically, so did Tori Amos raised me as well, you know? Kate Bush.
I had a roommate that went out with this girl that was actually in Playboy, like Girls of the Southwest Conference. And we lived in Houston. We were roommates in Houston. But I could always tell when they were having sex because running up that hill would be coming out of his room. She would always play that song to do it.
I used to do that, man. I used to have like this strict rule in my early 20s. Like whenever I'd like hook up with a guy, I'd be like, bink, and I'd hit like the Tori Amos like button. Poor fucking guys, man. And I'd be like sort of like singing as we were like making out. Just your classic nightmare, you know? Oh, yeah, well.
I know that girl.
Yeah, I was that girl. I just shamefully...
somewhere I made out with shamelessly. That girl in a city.
Oh, my God.
A different city. And it wasn't even you.
But I'm glad I never made out with that girl. That sounds exhausting.
So who are your people now? You got on here a little Elliot Smith.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great...
I don't know.
I have Elliot's... No, not the yeah, yeah, yes.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think I said that.
Look, I read things, and then I look away, and then I'm no longer reading them.
But I could see why you would.
Cat Power is what I meant, sorry.
Yeah, oh yeah, a ton of early Cat Power.
That was Elliot's set list that was in front of him.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really, I mean, I liked him earlier on, but it's funny, I kind of really dove into him, like, believe it or not, like... really dove in, though. I don't mean just like listening to EXO or whatever. Like, I dove into some deep shit probably like a year ago. Like, probably while I was writing
all those
that record.
Weird demos and shit that are out
now.
Yeah.
Just even his band. What's the name of the band before he, like, what the hood?
Heat Miser?
From Portland. Yeah. I mean, I really, really like, cause I do that. I'm like autistic in that way. Like, once I find like
one
thing,
I'm gonna introduce you to this girl.
I just like listen. What? Yeah. What girl?
The girl that I'm going out with.
Okay.
That way she can help you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so Elliot Smith, Cat Power, really...
I think people do that. I do that. Especially now, you can, like, if you fucking, like, somebody tells you about somebody.
You can just Google it, you can YouTube it.
Yeah, you can spend find, 8 hours exactly. just immersing yourself in these people, which is fun.
And then I actually ended up doing a Elliott Smith tribute night at Frontier Bar, and that was really special to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I sang Between the Bars and Pizzola.
That's nice. I'm doing one.
Yeah?
Yeah, there's one that my friend David is putting together at the Scottish Rite Theater in August.
Awesome. And maybe we should do a cover together at that show we might do on August 18th.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
That might be fun.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah. These songs are really hard, though, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
They're not what they're not what you think you're hearing. Yeah. That's what David said in the thing. He was like, don't worry, everyone's going to play. You just have to sing.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a shit show at Frontier Bar. Like, a lot of people just tore it up. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It is. It's everyone was very, like, getting wasted afterwards, like, God damn it, that was hard to play. Yeah. Like, he's not just a simple.
No.
Yeah.
It seems like it's simple because his singing is so innocent. He sounds like a person that doesn't know what they're doing. But when you try and figure out what the song is, you can't even figure out what tuning he's.
Yeah.
I can't.
He's like the Beatles in one person, like along with, like, I don't know, Laura Nero or something.
What about modern music? Now times.
What am I listening to now?
Take, for instance, do you have a summer jam? Is there a song that you... Come on, you're from New York.
I know,
it's
like I know.
You'd be going to the beach and like you say you're going to the beach, you want to hear a song on the way there.
What have I been listening to lately?
I have people that write me and tell me they're sick of this question.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been kind of... I don't know if it's a beach thing. I've been kind of listening to Tom Waits a lot lately again.
That's not a summer jam.
I know. I mean, I don't think I believe in summer. I kind of hide out because it's so hot and like go into a little cave. What else have I been listening to? I keep playing Dear Prudence like over and over again for the last 3 days because I just love the drums in that and I can't stop.
You too?
Yeah, I just Me can't. Too. I put on my headphones and I really dip into it and like the guitar as well. But
let me ask you a question. Do you think, and this is really weird, do you think that there's a hi-hat that comes in and is it... That's an overdub, I think.
You think? Because they did. Yeah, that's because I'm like, that's why I'm listening to it. I'm like, how did they do that? You're just fucking grooving.
I did a recording of it. It's two guitar parts that make up the thing. That's the hardest part to figure out.
That's what I assumed, actually, listening to it. Yeah, I don't know, but that's been my jam for like the last 3 days. I'll just be like, I gotta hear it again. And I'll just like put on my headphones and listen
to
it.
It's so good. Those guys blew the curve for everyone.
Oh,
there's no one's ever got, even Elliott Smith, you could say he's a one-man Beatles, but he's not really the Beatles.
Somebody just fucking wrote on Facebook like that the... you're a name dropper, but I won't be. But that...
Who? You dropped the name.
He's in the music industry. All right. This gentleman named John Leo. God, I feel horrible doing that.
John Leo?
Well, he did some booking for like David Ramirez and some people in town. And he posted that three most overrated bands, like the Beatles.
I like it when people say that.
The Beach Boys.
Yeah.
Muse, which is fine by me. I don't fucking care. But like the Beatles and the Beach Boys. And he said one other one. But yeah.
I like it when people don't like the Beatles because you know, there's some people you just can't get away from it. Elliott Smith couldn't get away from it. You just can't get away from it. It sounds liberating when someone says I hate the Beatles because then you don't have this cloud over your head and a glass ceiling you'll never get past.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah.
I'm in a band with like the biggest Beatles dude you've ever met, this guy Darren Murphy. You know him?
No.
Most Beatles guy you've ever met. I'll play you demos that you can't tell it's not the Beatles.
All right.
It's freaky.
All right.
You just did the most Italian
face
eye roll. Yeah.
Well, I was trying to think of. I was thinking about if I was like, he wants to play me something. We should look at the time.
Oh yeah.
I gotta do a 2:00.
Oh shoot, we gotta go.
Really? We've been talking for a while.
This has been great. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I'm really glad that you reached out.
I am too.
People need to get out and get this record. Forget. And you're gonna be in New York this week.
Yeah, I'll be playing a show.
I don't know when this comes out.
What now? But
I don't know when this comes out.
This album?
This episode.
Oh, no worries.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right.
Yeah. It'll be fun, though, to listen to.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Is there anything that I'm forgetting? Any big stuff going on?
I think
on?
That's it. The national release of the album is August 5th.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So, but it is, I think I messed up and I made it available on iTunes. already.
Well, people should get out there and buy it.
Yeah, or because on
Bandcamp. It's a really great album.
Thank you.
Yeah, you did a great job.
I'm really happy with the artwork, so I hope people too. Grab the cover, the full.
It's very classy looking.
Thank you.
And it looks clean. You know, some clean. A lot of times, things don't look national or worldwide because they got like a weird green on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you just want a good muted and very elegant font.
I think the album...
And a very sexy picture of you inside.
I think the album comes together once you have the hard copy. So if you want the hard copy, hit me up on Bandcamp and I'll mail it to you.
And you have a management. Tell him I said hi. Oh, I love Stephen Alcala. I love him. He came here and shot some stuff.
He's awesome.
I never saw it, but I did... why am I drawing a blank on their name? They're my friends.
I don't know.
Two guys.
Can't help you out.
Sweet guy. Used to work the door at ND. Used to work the door at Momo's.
Jack?
No, Jack's in New York. Yeah. Two guys. Two guy band. Drummer, guitar.
I don't fucking know.
Gasoline is their song. All right. God, I can't believe I'm forgetting this stuff. Too many people. That's it. You got New York. You're going to just be touring around record comes out.
Yeah, and I'm playing a few shows in New York. Manhattan on August 3rd. Playing at the Living Room with Susanna Schaffel.
Oh, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And then July 20th, which is in like a week, I'm playing Saturday night at the Ninth Ward in Buffalo, which is Ani DeFranco's venue in Buffalo. Yeah.
Well, this will come out, I think, by the fourth,
by the New York show?
I think so.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. Well, anybody that's up there, get out to New York. Go see Susanna Schaffel has been on the show 3 times.
Nice.
And she was the first guest. My first guest.
Awesome.
Yeah. I hope the best for you, and I hope we stay in touch.
I do like you.
And I want to get a summer jam for you.
Okay. All right.
Good luck.
Bye, everyone.
Anna Barbera, get out there, buy that record. Forget. It's great. Fantastic album. We will hear more from her in just a second. I'd like to thank Joanna for stopping by. It was great to meet her. Great to sit down and chat with her and get to know her. Seems like a very cool person. I think we might be doing a show together in August. I'm waiting to hear back from her. So I'll let you know as soon as that's happening. While you're there, out there on the internet, be sure that you subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. When you do, rate it, leave a comment. It helps us. We're starting to get a little bit of advertising interest. So we have to have our numbers up. We have to have as much numbers as possible. So be sure you're out there, get involved. You can follow me on Twitter at Johnny Gowdy, also on Instagram at Johnny Gowdy. And you can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? So why don't we hear a little bit more from Joanna Barbera? Thank you for listening. Let's get down.
I think I'm ready to go back to New York City.